9 plants typically.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And for the next 2 hours, if you want, you can hang around. And we're going to talk about cars and oil and gasoline and repairs and just different ideas on how to save you money. And it doesn't involve you me putting your money in my pocket. It doesn't have anything to do with that. It just has to do with I've got a lot of years of experience. I started working at a gas station in 1968, and here I am today, a long time later, still in the car repair business. So it's something that I enjoy, and it's something I'm pretty good at. And so if you have a question or a problem or if you have a dilemma, we won't name any shops or anything like that unless you have something nice to say about the shop. But we'll avoid that because I don't want to deal with the phone calls from the owner of the shop, you know, Monday morning yelling and screaming at me and telling me that that I don't really have parents. Anyway, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. I have a list of the best car repair shops at my website, marksalem.com. You'll find Strictly Diesel Service and Repair on that list. Nate knows diesels. He's a die-hard diesel service repair and parts guy. He works on foreign and domestic diesels, but Chevy, Dodge, and Ford, jumbo, all the time, every day. So if you have a problem, then and you're in the northeast part of town, like I said, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, then Strictly Diesel is open Monday through Friday, and they also sell parts, and you can contact them on their website as well. That's Strictly Diesel, and again, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. When it comes to car repair, you can imagine that I've been doing radio since 1988 in the Phoenix area. And actually, I've done radio in St. Louis, and I've done radio on the NASCAR network. I've done a lot of places. And I'm not here to beat up shops, and I'm not here to let you beat up shops. What we're going to do is learn from one another. The other day, I had a note, an email from a gentleman. He was really nice. He had his motorhome at a facility. And it was something very simple that's now turned into something really ugly, and they can't fix it. Well, I knew the owner of that shop. And so I said to him, I know the owner of that shop, and I'll bring your issue to his attention. And you guys can work it out. So I sent him the email along with my comments, and he writes me back about 4 hours later, and he goes, this coach is not in our shop. It's just not here. He says we don't have him in our customer database. We don't have the license plate. We don't have the VIN number. We don't have the car on the lot. We don't have any unidentified motorhomes that we're working on. It's just not here, and we don't have him in our customer database. And if he has a motorhome here for repair, his name and his address and his coach would be in our database, and nothing's there. So I sent the gentleman a nice letter and said, you said it was this shop, and evidently this shop at this address isn't the one that has your coach. So I don't know that I can help you unless I know the owner, and I can just put the owner kind of on notice on your behalf that you're kind of concerned. But I'm not going to go get your motorhome and take it to my shop and fix it. That's just not how it works. Nevertheless, what's really important and what's going on right now is a couple of different things. Again, 602-508-0960 if you have a comment. What's going on right now is we're finding out that there's a whole lot of that part's not available. I'm told it's going to be 6 months or 6 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever. That happens, and it does happen on a regular basis. But what's going on behind the scenes is there's many senior guys with gray hair that's creeping out the front of their collar, and they know that, okay, well, just from one vendor it's not available, but that same part has 10 different part numbers, so I will use software to go get those numbers, and then I would start querying those databases. Folks, it's no secret on the internet that you can buy any part you want. You can plug in your car, the VIN number, the mileage, and you can click on the part of the car that says differential or transmission, and you can find anything you want. What we're seeing today in the car market is we're seeing things get together. So, for instance, you can get on the internet, and you can often buy parts one at a time that are cheaper than I'm buying them, and I buy probably pretty close to $1 million worth of parts every year. So it doesn't bother me that you can do that, because in reality, your part comes with a part warranty, so there's no exposure there. Where my part comes with a part and labor warranty, so if it goes bad, I'm going to change it and not charge you. And so we'll put you back the way we should have done the first time. But there's, you also oftentimes have to wait a long time for your part, and I don't. And you oftentimes will get a part that you've never seen the name of, or in a plain box, or a part that's been installed that got put back in the box. Those are things I don't deal with. But that's okay. But the bottom line is that there's a huge discrepancy today of what a part will cost. It's not uncommon. And just the other day, the shop was asking $505 for the part. The dealer was asking $480 for the part. The local parts store was $560 for the part. And on and on and on. And so this part was kind of all over, but it had everything to do with this part right now is out of circulation. So what you're hoping to do is find that part on a shelf, so you're querying a lot of different parts places. But in the Phoenix area, it's real simple. You can get on the internet and you can order parts, but it's going to come from a place in Phoenix. There's some huge parts warehouses in Phoenix, just like there is in every other major city. And those parts houses, there's NAPA, there's Factory Motor Parts, there's Parts Authority, there's O'Reilly's, there's AutoZone. There's huge factories, parts, huge parts vendors that have warehouses in Phoenix. So when you log on and you go to, you know, myautopart.com or whatever the heck it is, then as you pick the part, you don't even know which warehouse you're getting. You just know that that warehouse is going to be told to put that box and send it to you UPS or FedEx or whatever. That's what's going to happen. They're not going to cover labor, so there might be a discount there, because if I walked away from a labor claim or a warranty claim, I'm sure I'd get the part cheaper, but I'm not willing to assume that risk. So those are the kinds of issues that we're having today, but it's okay. Right now, I got in line for a particular part, and the guy goes, he says, you know, there's people in front of you, but we expect that we're going to be able to fill your order in the next 10 to 20 days. And I said, okay. The customer doesn't have a choice. I can't find it anywhere else, so I'll stand in line. Meanwhile, we're still looking. We have somebody on the phone. Gil, who's that?
Say hello to Howard.
Howard, good morning.
Mr. Salem, thank you so much for taking my call. I don't know if you remember my voice or me, but we spoke 2 or 3 weeks ago. And you made mention I have all the brake lights on. I have a 2005 Mercury Sable with the ABS lights on and the brake lights on. At that time, I was losing pedal. You said it probably was the master cylinder and I should go here and there. If I'm not mistaken, you told me Harker's on Indian School. Needless to say, I didn't do that. I took it to another shop. They repaired the problem. It was the driver's side rear had lost something. Anyway, it was destroyed. So that was rebuilt. And the brake lights are still on. The brakes are fine, but the ABS and the other lights are still on. That's the reason I'm calling, to tell you this turn of events. But the brakes work great.
Okay. Well, did he tell you that I'm only going to fix this portion of your brakes and I'm going to leave your dash light looking like a Christmas tree? Your dashboard looking like a... I mean, did he tell you that?
I went in and told him that those lights have been on since day one. And as I told you in our previous conversation, they told me it was the... not called the proportioning valve. I call it the proportioning valve that has not been replaced, and I need that replaced in a wire back in that brake that went bad.
Okay. Well, Howard, the problem with this conversation is that on one hand you say the brakes are working perfectly, and on the other hand you talk about a proportioning valve, and on the other hand you have a red brake light on.
The brake light's on still.
Howard, it's my turn to talk. Howard.
Sorry, Mark.
Okay. That doesn't make sense to me. Howard, I'm not calling you a liar. Don't misunderstand, but I'm terribly concerned about your safety, because a red brake light means don't drive this car anymore. A red brake light means I've lost control of the brake system. I have a pressure problem. I'm not doing this, what I'm supposed to do. I'm not doing that. But you're still driving it, and I don't know why. But when you took it in for the repair, I don't know what he did for you, and I don't, you don't even, can't tell me what he did for you. But the bottom line is it's not a good idea to let them cherry pick of, and create a menu of, there's five items wrong with your car, and they fix only four. And it's all brake related. So I'm struggling with the fact that I know a red brake light typically means uneven pressure. I know red brake lights, if they mean uneven pressure, that means the master cylinder's lost half of its brakes, but then Howard says the brakes are fine. Well, if the front brakes were working, he may think they're fine, but he's lost the back brakes. But if the back brakes were gone, he probably wouldn't notice because the fronts do a pretty big job of the entire braking. So you only have two choices. I can't fix it over the phone for you. Your choice number one is go back to him and say, I want you to address this. Or number two, take it to another shop and have them address it. I can't fix your car. I'm worried for your safety and for your family because you say you got a red brake light on. There is a yellow brake light, and there are yellow dash lights. Yellow means caution. Continue to drive. Drive home. You know, you say to your daughter, if it's red, call me. I'll come and get you. If it's yellow, just drive it on home. Those are the issues. So that's the best I can do, Howard. I'm sorry. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and you're welcome to join us. I told you about good shops, and I do this because I'm happy to tell you about them, and geographically they're located kind of all over the valley. Action Auto's at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. Him and I have been friends. We've been good friends. I respect his business sense. I respect his technical ability. And I respect the fact that he has a really nice place up in the mountains of northern Minnesota, I think it is, that he took me one time, and he taught me how to ride a snowmobile, and then he left me on this big lake because I couldn't follow his taillights, and him and this other guy were doing like 700 miles an hour. So anyway, I have forgiven him for that, but when you're up at I-17 in Deer Valley, you're looking for a full-service, family-owned auto repair shop, I want to suggest Action Auto. He's on the northwest corner of I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner of I-17 in Deer Valley, and he's a good guy. I promise you, he's a good guy. 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Well, thank you for holding over the break. It's 19 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. I want to tell you real quick about Larry Harker's Auto. Howard a minute ago mentioned that I had sent him and said to him I would suggest you go to Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Folks, there's a variety of shops in the valley that I refer people to because I know the owners and I know that they know what they're doing. I know that they're not going to play games with you. They're not going to take advantage of you. They're not going to lie to you. They've been around a long time. They sell good parts. They back their warranties up. And typically, it's a family-owned operation. At Harker's, you're going to meet Ellen at the front counter. And you'll understand quickly she's a no BS lady and she knows cars, so don't try to out jabber her. And then Bob, her husband, and their nephew is in the shop. And when it comes to diagnostic and maintenance, they are really good, like the rest of the shops. So if you're in the area of 38th Avenue and Indian School and you don't have a shop, may I suggest that you visit Harker's. Let's go to the phones. Tim, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Oh, hi, Mark. I've been here in the Phoenix area for about 4.5 years, and I've been listening to you, over those 4 years, and I enjoy your show, and I generally agree with everything you say. I've got a 2010 Honda Element, and since I've been here, I've been taking it to a Honda dealer and getting a service, and I've been happy with that. But just recently, I took it in. And I got a suggested list of items to do on my car that totaled over $4,000. And I thought some of the prices on some of the items were high. And so, and I've heard you talk about fuel systems and tune-ups and being overcharged for that or things that are not necessary. So I've got about three or four items I'd like to ask you about and get your opinion on it.
Okay, just give them to me one right after the other. You go give me one first. And I'll address it.
Okay. The first one was fuel. It just says fuel systems.
Okay. If you have a problem with the idle, if you have a lean code in your computer, if you have a check engine light on, if the car starts and idles cold perfectly and idles hot perfectly, if the car will do 70, 80, 90, 100 miles an hour, skip that one. Those are the symptoms for some fuel problem that somebody thinks. That's a wallet flush, and just like probably a couple of the rest of them are. So if you don't have the symptoms, then you don't need to work, and it's not in your owner's manual anyway. When you look at the maintenance, it doesn't say that we're going to go in there and flush your fuel injectors. It doesn't say that.
Okay.
Go ahead. Number two.
All right. The next one was plugs, $500.
For a set of spark plugs, how many miles does it have on it?
125,000.
Okay. Is this the first set of spark plugs you've had?
Since I bought the car. Okay. I've had the car since 2012. They're staying plugs and adjusting the valves. I think that includes adjusting the valves.
Okay. I love these. So in the morning, if the valves are loose, they're going to clatter, and then the clatter will go away when the temperature gauge first moves. If the valves are too tight, it's going to backfire, and it's going to backfire all the time. So when you hit the gas, that's what it's going to be. You don't have any of that.
Okay.
So a valve adjustment on a Honda is really good money, but the problem is that the customer doesn't have any symptoms, then you have to defend yourself not only to the authorities but to God when it comes down to it. And then the spark plugs, and does the $500 just the spark plugs, or is that the valve adjustment and the spark plugs?
That's both.
Okay, all right. Because I was going to say, a valve adjustment, $500? No, I don't like either one of those. I do think that the spark plugs, if you've not had them changed, and they're the original ones, I think a set of spark plugs would be an enhancement. Just to replace the spark plugs, you're likely to spend $150 for a set of spark plugs, depending on which one of the four levels you get. The bottom, the 25%, 50%, 75%, or those big dog platinums that will last the rest of your life and my life and our kids' lives. So it's really up to you. Just, you look at the shop owner and you go, what kind of spark plugs do you put in your wife's car? And he goes, I hate my wife, and say, let's change. Is your mother still alive? All right, go ahead with the next one.
Okay, the last two are a coolant flush and brake fluid flush. And they had $190 for each one.
Yeah, that's, I'd love to do that. I'm writing all this down for my guys just to say, these are some of the prices that they're quoting. You are due for a cooling system flush if it's never had one. Most of the time the cooling system in that car is 100,000 miles. You're at 125. So a cooling system flush, but I think if you call around and just say you have a Honda Element, how much for a cooling system flush, you'll find some 5-star shops that will be able to do that for a whole lot less than $190. The other one, what was the other one? We have testability to test it for water contamination, and I think you do a brake fluid flush when you have to open the brake system. So you bring the car in and the brakes are bad and the left front caliper's been leaking. Now I have to open up the system and let's do the flush then and there. But we have the ability to check the moisture content in the brake fluid. And I want to change your question. Mark, how many times do you see your customers spend money because they don't change their brake fluid? And what's the cost associated with that? And it's going to be this answer. I don't know. The answer is I don't think I've ever seen a car come in. Now, it is true. We'll see cars come in at 300,000 miles with muddy brake fluid, and the master cylinder has gone to master cylinder heaven. We see that. Now, they should have been flushing a hell of a long time ago, but they weren't. So the color is not really a good indicator of it. But at 125, if somebody's going to open up your brake system or do a brake system, then you do the flush. But to just do it out here in Never Land, I would strongly suggest you reconsider.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Well, and what part of town do you live in?
Well, I'm in Surprise.
Okay. All right. I got plenty of shops that are in that circular area. I had Auto Dynamics. I had a nice letter from a lady the other day about Auto Dynamics. And then I got Harker's at 38th Avenue and Indian School. And so I got Billy at 25th Street. I don't know if you come into town or work close in town, but there's some other shops. But we're all going to be a little bit less than the numbers. All the independent shops are going to be a little bit less than the numbers you've quoted. Okay?
Okay. All right.
All right. Well, thank you very much. All righty. Ann, good morning. How can I help you, Ann?
I have battery question.
Okay.
I have a Kia. Do you want to know what I have?
Yes, ma'am, please.
A Kia Sedona, and it's a 2004, but it only has 48,000 miles.
Okay. Okay.
And I, you know, I haven't checked really good. But anyway, I have battery problems because I don't drive.
Okay.
I don't even put on 10 miles a week, so I keep losing my battery. So what can I just got a new battery now 3 weeks ago. Now, what can I do to keep that battery going?
How long between when you do use it? Is it days or a week?
Yeah, it's days. I go to the grocery store a couple times a month and the drugstore once a month, but they're real close.
Okay, all right. Okay, that's a key there. Now, how long did the last battery last? 2, 3 years? 4 years?
Yeah.
Okay, that's kind of normal. Two or three years is kind of normal. To answer your question, you could take your car to a shop and say to them, I want you to wire a pigtail from my battery to have it come out by the headlight on the right front. And then you're going to buy this little box that plugs into the wall, and when you pull your car in, you're going to...
Wait a minute. Oh, gosh. I don't see. I have outdoor... A parking is covered. I'm not close to a plug-in.
Okay.
And what my question... Some people say let it idle for 20 minutes, you know, or then some people say, no, you have to drive it, you know, 10 or 20 miles or whatever. But
well,
you know what I mean?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm 95.
Okay.
I'm kind of an old lady.
I'm going to send my grandson over to hot rod your car once a week. Is that okay?
I'm teasing you.
He would do. Here's the problem. First of all, there really isn't a problem because if you're replacing the battery every 2 to 3 years, and in light of your use, that's good. Now, you also are probably buying a 5-year battery, which means that you're going to pay for the time you used, so you're going to get a credit towards the new battery.
Yeah, gosh, I've been through all that, you know.
Okay.
Is there a way for me to charge that battery by idling it? Or?
No. That's a bad idea. The gasoline and the car sitting there running and the motor's not going to heat up and it's not going to run efficient, that's going to put gas in the oil and then we're going to dilute the oil and then we're going to cause problems there. We might come to a problem there. No, the answer is no. Either you drive it more. Or you just live with the situation that you have. If I can't plug in a little trickle charger at night time, then that kind of creates a problem. But stay there because I'm going to get back to you after the break. But you're still getting 2 to 3 years out of the batteries, and that's okay. There's a lot of gray-haired guys out there that brag about 5 years, and they're not telling you the truth. Well, welcome again, everybody. 31 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. I'm going to go ahead and go back to Ann because I had to take a break. But Ann, I'm back with you.
Listen, I'm not complaining about the batteries, but when I go out there and the darn thing is dead, you know, and I have to call AAA and then they come over and charge it. And they say, well, it's just that I don't drive it enough. And so I can you tell me, should I drive it 10 miles once a week or...
there's no good answer, and it's not a good answer. I'm pretending that you're my grandmother, and I love my grandmother.
Uh-huh.
None of that makes sense at all. So you're going to go drive. I say to you, you know what? I need you on the freeway for 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's not even good enough to bring a full charge to a battery.
Yeah.
That's not good enough. And then if you're going to drive during that period of time and you're going to have the air conditioning on and the radio on, then all of a sudden the alternator is supporting those electrical devices and it's still trying to charge the battery.
Well, can I, in other words, are you saying, now, like this new battery, I shouldn't have to worry, just go out and not worry about going only 10 miles a week, that it's not going to die on me?
I'm telling you that the battery life under the conditions you're using it should be between 2 and 3 years.
Yes.
Okay. And yes, when you and the girls are going to go out, maybe take your car more often.
Yeah,
okay?
But I'm not driving. I'm not going anywhere. I'm the grocery store and the drugstore. And then when I go out there and it's dead, you know.
I know, but I can't predict when it's going to be dead.
So you don't think I have to do anything to keep it charged?
I don't think that anything that you've suggested that's been suggested to you by other people is going to benefit you at all. I think you're
going
to spend... I think you're going to spend a whole lot of money driving around and having somebody drive your car, and there's no guarantee that if they're on the road and they're doing less than 35 miles an hour that we're going to put a whole bunch of electricity back in that battery. So either you know, maybe you say you go to the grocery store. Well, why don't you pick a Bash's that's 20 miles away?
No, I say I'm 95 years old.
No.
I got to go for... I'm familiar. In other words, that battery, it shouldn't be going dead on me.
No, you're not going to nail me down like that. I told you a battery will last 2 to 3 years easily. Okay?
Yeah.
The battery is going to burn out like a light bulb. Someday you're going to go out there and it's not going to work. But you have AAA. You pay for the service. Who cares? So you could say to them, hey, do you have a AAA facility close by? Yes. Okay. Jumpstart my car. I'm going to take my car over there. They're going to take me home. They're going to charge my battery. And then they're going to pick me up and take me back to the car. And I'll drive it home. You could do that once a month. You could find a shop close by where you're at and just say to them, would you charge my battery, take me home, and then pick me up? That's it.
I did that. I had to do that one time, too. It's just that they tell me, well, you don't drive it enough.
That's true. How are we going to fix that, though? How are we going to fix that? You won't let my grandson come drive your car. And you, your sec, don't want me. I'll have that thing up and down to Flagstaff, and I'll charge the battery from here till tomorrow and day after. It's not that you're not driving it enough. The duration of the drives is not replenishing the electricity it used to start the car. So on a 1 to 10 scale, it takes a 6 to start the car. But you just go to the store and back, and you're only putting 2 back in it. So over a period of time through attrition, it's going to end up where you hit the key and it goes click click. The only other thing. I mean, I can think of a lot of things, but I don't think that there's no magic bullet, and I disagree with the idea that you should let it idle. I think that's a bad idea. I think it's a bad idea for the emissions. I think it's a bad idea for you to sit in a car and let it idle for fear that the carbon monoxide would overtake you. I think it's a bad idea to have the engine just sitting there and idling and all that fuel washing all the oil off the rings and the cylinders. For all of those reasons, the idea of either you letting it idle is a bad idea. Maybe there is a possibility where one of your neighbors or a friend of yours goes to visit her mother clear across town, and you say, hey, I'll go with you and I'll drive. So look for excuses to use the car in that kind of a way. But if you're only putting a battery in every 2 to 3 years and you describe the issues you have, I find that completely normal, and I think it's a waste of time to try to fix a problem that happens every 2 or 3 years. I've got to go, Ann. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem, then you're more than welcome to join us. And the list of good shops I have is on our website, marksalem.com. I've been in this business. We opened up our repair shop in 1994. Actually, we opened up a gas station in 1979, and then we ran the gas station, and then we went to a shopping mall, but then we opened up our present facility in 1994. So really since 79, I've been in the car repair business, but I worked at a gas station all that time from 68 to 79. So it's one of those things. I've been around cars. I'm an ASE Master Certified Technician, so I've taken all 8 of the automotive tests, and I have passed all 8 of the automotive tests. And I testify as an expert for the law enforcement community, for insurance companies, and on behalf of courts. So the judge will ask me to look at something and give them a written opinion on what the situation was, brake failure, or whatever. So been around the block. But this radio show is me giving back to the community. It's not about my shop. It's not about trying to get you to come across town or anything like that at all. But in an effort to give you peace of mind, the best car repair shops list I have is geographically located. There's shops in virtually every part of town, and these guys have promised me that they'll take good care of you. And I'm proud to tell you that I've only taken one shop since 1988. I've only taken one shop off my list.
2 minutes.
Others have sold and gone off the list. Others have closed, but the fact of the matter is I've only had to remove one, and I didn't have any problem with that because it's one of those things, parents. The story it doesn't make sense, and you're looking at the person telling it to you, and it doesn't make sense, and your voice inside your chest is yelling, "Something's wrong, Mark. Something's wrong," and there was. So 602-508-0960, and we'll be back. Can I take a break right now?
Sure.
Okay, I'm going to give it to Gil, and we'll be back in about 3 minutes. If you 42 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here talking about cars. If you'd like to join us, we have a couple of lines that are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I just want to address Ann one more time. Ann, I had a friend of mine call me, and he said that he would be willing to come over and put a solar panel on the roof of the shade over your car. Then he would wire the solar panel down, and you would then plug it in when you leave the car there, and you would unplug it before you drive away. And obviously you could not drive away with it being plugged in because you'll rip all the infrastructure off. That's a great idea. You could have a handyman do that, but you're probably going to need permission from the property management company to put a small solar panel up on the roof. It wouldn't really be anybody be able to see it, and they could probably put it down with a splash of tar here and a tar there, which means they wouldn't be drilling any holes or anything. So if that were to happen, if that's something that you wanted to look at, mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com. Paul, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark, I got a question. I got a 235 Chevrolet engine, and I developed a rear main seal leak. Is that repairable? I took it to a shop, and they gave me a price to repair it. They repaired it. As I was taking it home, I realized my speedometer wasn't working. I took it back, and I had a bigger leak than when I took it in. What they told me is that they tried to repair it, it didn't repair it, and that because they have to drop the crank, can they just take, because he tried to take just the front rear bearing off and replace it. Is that something that would be correct, that they do have to drop the entire crank?
Well, I think it's a waste of your time, and certainly it's a waste of mine to try to discuss the correct procedure from a guy who couldn't do it the first time. Okay?
Okay.
So here's what's going on. Yeah, you got to drop the pan, and then you're going to have to pull that rear main cap off. Now, the seal is probably a rubber lip seal, and it comes in two halves. Us old guys are going to dig out the upper part, the upper half. We're going to dig that out, and then we're going to slide the new seal in, but instead of the seal, the half moon seal being horizontal, we're going to clock it at 2 o'clock, 7 o'clock. Then we're going to put the other seal in the main bearing cap, and we're going to plug all that in together because we've done it before. And so what he's telling you is I took the rear main, I took the oil pan off, I dropped the rear main seal, and I just put half the seal in. He put the bottom half of the seal in, because when you pull the cap off, the bottom half of the seal is in the cap. So he takes that one out, puts this one in, puts the thing back up, bolts it up, and he's hoping like heck it's going to work, and you know it didn't. So I think you should be nice but polite and ask for your money back. Because what he did didn't move you forward. What part of town do you live in?
Exactly. I'm in Peoria. Okay. In the northern area.
Okay. I just go over to Harker's. They can do
Where
that.
Where are they located at?
38th Avenue and Indian School. And there are a bunch of guys there that are gray-haired guys. This, on a 1 to 10 scale, is about a 6 or a 7 for them. Obviously, it was on a 1 to 10 scale, it was a 15 for the first shop you tried. but you need an old guy on this. You need somebody who's done this for a living. Now, there also is a rope seal in there, and he may
I
have...
I think that's what they said.
Okay.
I think that's what they said, that it was a rope seal, and they replaced it with a rope seal because the neoprene ones weren't available or something.
That's... That's just an excuse why I didn't do a very good job. Yes, and you need to leave it to the shop because they're the ones that are going to have to guarantee it. So you guys go in and decide if it's got rope, you want to put rope back in it, put rope back in it. I'm going to expect it not to leak. If it's got a rope and you want to put a rubber in there, then put the rubber back in there. I want you to do what you do if it was your brother's car and you loved your brother. Okay?
Okay.
And that's what I would do.
All right.
Okay?
I appreciate your explanation and advice on that.
Okay, well, good luck to you. This is the worst of our industry in the sense of this. Someone represents themselves as being able to fix it, and then they don't fix it. And according to Paul, he's got a leak worse than he had before. But there's no talk about, hey, put me back the way you found me, Mr. Shop Owner. Give me all my money back. You didn't move me forward. I'm in worse shape than I was before. So hopefully Paul will be able to do that in a nice way and get the shop owner to see it his way. David, excuse me. David, you're up. How can I help you?
Hey, how are you?
I'm up in Payson. It's raining like crazy, and there's elk all over the meadow. I'm sorry.
I talked to you before. I have a 2010 Town and Country, and we've talked, and I described it. You come to a stop, and it feels like I'm not pushing the clutch in. And you said it had something to do with the transmission.
Okay.
And that problem went away, but now it's back.
Okay.
Now, where is that little part that I need to change?
Well, no, that's...
Inside the transmission or outside the...
No. This is not change a part. You have to diagnose it. And the only thing I can tell you is when you come to a stop, I think you represented that it was like you had your car in fourth gear and you forgot to push the clutch in. So the car came to a jerk, jerk, jerk stop and the engine was dead. Am I right?
Yep.
Okay.
And then the other part of the symptom is occasionally it'll just drop down a gear and then it will not shift up. Or when I start out, it won't shift up.
Okay.
I have to stop and restart the car.
Okay.
And then it'll go through a normal shift.
Okay, well, you're not going to fix it, and neither am I. But there's a whole lot of guys in this town with gray hair and some dirty fingernails that can fix this. I would call Automatic Transmission Exchange down on Washington, and I would make
I'm at Washington and 35th.
Okay, then take it to Automatic Transmission Exchange. Ask them to take a quick ride with you. But if your intention is to take one of our technicians for a two-hour ride, you're going to be not real welcomed when they come back. So,
no, of course not.
Just describe the problem. Meanwhile, this is what I want you to do. I want you, when you come in to a stop, I want you to kind of come in a little harder than you used to. I want you to push the brake pedal a little bit more. I want you to come more abruptly because I want to make sure that the signal, when you hit the brake, we're going to cancel the lockup torque converter, and I want to make sure that's what's going on. Now, can you feel that something's going to happen before it happens? Can you feel the downshift and the da-da-da-da-da? Can you feel that?
No, not normally.
Okay. Another thing that you can do is if it gets in the habit where it does that on a regular basis, I want you to shift it to neutral, come to a stop, wait till the light turns green, put it into drive, and answer this question. When you put it into drive, did it die or did it go?
Sometimes it goes. I've tried all that.
Okay, well,
the worst problem that I have is that I can't shift.
Okay. Well, no, you got a bigger problem because you're trying to fix it based on, symptoms that are moving all over the map right now, and you're not going to do that. The torque converter clutch assembly is inside the transmission. You'll have to take the transmission out to get to it. You might be able to have somebody just disconnect the torque converter lockup, and you could do that, but that's a bad idea because you just took fifth gear away from the transmission, so you're not going to get good highway miles. There's lots of moving parts here. You only have two choices. Keep living with it or have a fix. Those are the only two choices you got. There's no middle ground. But someone's going to have to diagnose it to find out what's wrong with it. And if they pull the pan on it and it's full of metal, they go, well, the lockup solenoid's got to be damaged by all this metal. It's either part of the metal or it's this metal is circulating through that thing and caused it to malfunction. Well, if that's the case, we're not going to just clean the metal out. The transmission's toast. And at that point, you clean the pan up, put new fluid in it, and give it back to the customer and say, it's NFL, not for long. But there's no quick fix here. that someone has to diagnose the problem, and the problem can be in three or four different places. And I would say three of the four places are going to be take the transmission out and fix it. So it's not going to be something that you're going to be able to make an adjustment outside the transmission. That's just not going to happen. So good luck to you, buddy. Automatic Transmission Exchange, if you're close to 40th and 40th Street in Washington, I'd certainly have them take a look at it. But do yourself a favor. I'm giving you good advice. If you're going to take someone for a ride, and if you can make it happen in the first two or three stops, fine. But if you can't, take them back home, because the shop owner doesn't like it when you take our technicians for 20, 30, 40, 50 minutes. And the technician's too embarrassed to say, hey, take me back home. So just be considerate of the time, and remember, that's billable time that he could have otherwise been made. Well, good luck to you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or car problem, you're welcome to join us. Gil, are we empty right now?
Lines are open.
Lines
right
are wide open, Gil says. So there's five lines, and you can grab them. We're going to take this up to 58 minutes after 10. We're going to take about a 3 or 4 minute break, and then about 2 minutes after the top of the hour, we're going to do another hour of car talk. So if you get in now, then you're guaranteed to be over at the top of the hour. Part of the diagnostic process is having someone in front of you that knows the process and has done the process. And transmissions are a breed all of their own. There are a lot of guys that work for me that are absolutely astounding technicians, master technicians. But there are things that we take to a transmission shop because we're just not – transmissions they don't occupy our world. Air conditioning problems and cars that crank that don't start and fuel-related problems, emissions problems, check engine lights, all that stuff, we do that. So we even lean on some of the shops that I tell you about because we want to take advantage of their ability to diagnose this kind of stuff. So that's really what's the best. Gil, who's on the line?
Say hello to Thano.
Thano. Is that T-H-A-N-O? Is that how
exactly.
It is?
T-H-A-N-O. That's right, Thano.
Okay, good. Thank you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Okay, so I have a 2006 Sequoia SR5. I've had it since November. And I don't know if I have a brake issue or not. I started to drive this thing and noticed that when I'm sitting in an intersection, I'm stopped at the light. My foot's on the brake holding the vehicle, and if I don't pay close attention, it starts to slip away.
Okay.
Now, I took it in. I was told by one shop that all of my rotators, or all of my, everything has to be replaced, $3,000 brake job.
Okay.
And then I went to another shop who showed me my rotors. They were in perfect condition, and I had 90% life left on all my shoes. So I got two completely different stories, and I'm still kind of really... Like, I'll stop the car, but then after 30 seconds, I kind of have to give
okay.
it a little bit more.
All right, I got it. I wouldn't go back to either one of those two guys. All I want to know is, I want to know is one thing, and I'll tell you what's wrong with it, okay? I want to know one thing.
Yep.
The brake fluid level. Full? Clean?
I would say full. I haven't looked at it.
And you haven't added anything to the brake fluid level since you've owned it.
Correct.
And in the time when the pedal begins to fade to the floor, has the red brake light ever popped? Because you'll be pushing on the brake pedal, and you'll think, gosh, I'm pushing. And then all of a sudden you'll get to a part, and you push, and it clicks, and boom, the light comes on. Has that happened yet?
No.
Okay.
No light.
Next time it starts fading, I want you to stay with it. I want you to stay with the pedal. So if it starts fading, just keep applying pressure, and I think you're going to get to a point that I just described where there's kind of a pop and the red brake light's going to come on. The master cylinder's bypassing. That's all there is to it. You can take that to the bank. The master cylinder needs to be replaced.
Okay.
That's it. If you don't have any fluid, that means you don't have a leak. And so if you're not consuming fluid, and you say you aren't, then you don't have a leak, because a leak will cause that as well, a wheel cylinder or a caliper that's leaking. The pedal will fade to the floor because we're pushing fluid out that leak. But you said that the fluid sped the same, and you haven't, and everything you have is, it has nothing to do with the AVS, it has nothing to do with the rotors, it has nothing to do with the pads. The hydraulic pump that's connected to your foot is supposed to push pressure, high pressure fluid, to each one of the four braking units and apply brakes to the car. The problem is it's not holding pressure, and that's why your pedals sink into the floor. So you can take that diagnosis to the bank.
2 minutes.
Right. Okay. Okay, that's what Google told me.
Oh, don't say that.
I know, but I mean, I went to two shops with completely different stories. I'm like, I'm calling Mark Salem.
Okay, well, yeah, what part of town do you live in?
I'm in North Central Phoenix.
Okay, 25th Street Auto is up there. Martin's Auto's up there. Blackwell Auto's up there. All of those guys, they're gray-haired guys. They've been around the block, and they know the difference between right and wrong. And if you say to them, intermittently my pedal is fading to the floor, and the fluid doesn't change, and I don't have any leaks, and I can show you how to make it happen for yourself, they'll just laugh at you and say, you've probably been talking to Salem. But I didn't put words in your mouth. I'm using your words, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And you got it right. That's really the symptom. So, yeah, I look forward to getting to the bottom of it, but not the bottom of my floor.
And not to the bottom of your wallet, as everybody guesses. So they're looking at your brakes, and they're looking at the rotors and the pads. And then the question is, you want to grab that guy and grab him by the ears, and you want to say, and how is it that the rotors and the pads are going to cause the brake pedal to fade away? How is that?
Right.
Now, again, if there was a fluid loss, then he would be looking at the wheel cylinders and the calipers looking for wet oil or brake fluid that's going to control, attract dust.
Yeah, the second shop actually let me go underneath the vehicle and look for all that stuff. And there was no leakage. There was no wetness. There was nothing.
Okay. Well, obviously, whoever was in front of you doesn't know how a master cylinder works or what the symptom is. You didn't get what you needed, but I'm just telling you, I'm 100% sure. I'm 100% sure that the master cylinder is bypassing if there's no fluid loss. So that's it. That's the big if, is if there's no fluid loss, then the master cylinder is internally bypassing and you need to replace it and replace all the brake fluid. We'll be back 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We'll be back.
Again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. If you'd like to join the conversation, if you have a car question, or if you want me to settle a feud between my dad says this and my husband says that, then I can do that. 602-508-0960. Kurtz Automotive has been on my list since Jesus was a baby. They're located at I-17 and Bell Road. Kurtz knows how to fix cars, domestic, import, gas, and diesel. They have ASE certified technicians. And I can't tell you how many times Kurtz, like the rest of my shops, they get introduced to a customer because I send the customer to them, and then they fix the car. And then the customer begins to be a customer for the rest of that time. That's how it kind of works really well. There are guys out there that are really good diagnosticians. And there's also, we're all smart enough to know that sometimes the answer is I can't pinpoint the problem. You need to wait till it gets worse. I know it only happens twice a month, but we just need to wait till it gets worse and I can probably track it down. But for right now, I can't do anything but guess, and that's going to cost you a lot of money. So Kurt, you're not going to hear that from Kurtz, that it's going to cost you a lot of money, because they can fix cars. So Kurtz Automotive is a place, if it's up at I-17 and Bell Road, if you're in that area. Let's go to Andrew. Andrew, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Hey, I just recently purchased a 2006 military Humvee. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. I want to do a Duramax and Allison transmission and motor swap on it. There's a place in Utah that is known for it. I was wondering if you knew of anybody here in Scottsdale or Phoenix that does that type of work.
Yeah, the shop's going to want to be a big part of picking the kit. Because we have ways to talk to vendors and stuff like that to make sure that everything comes with it. What have you got in there now? That 6.6, that 6-liter GM motor?
It's the 6.5-liter dog of a diesel with the 4-speed automatic transmission. It only has 400 miles on it, but it's I know it, eventually I want to swap that out so that it's a little bit nicer of a motor.
Okay. So, and now it has a 6.5. It's the older diesel. You want the 6.6, the new Duramax motor.
That's correct.
Okay. The only guy in town that I would think you'd call is Tom Blackwell. I can tell you he does this kind of work. I can tell you you're going to wait for a while to get in line. He does a fantastic job. He's very thorough. And this kind of and there's going to be some re-engineering that has to be done, and that's where he
right,
really
right.
excels, is we're going to need to take the shift lever off, and we're going to need to put a bend in it right here, and we're going to need to change directions, and we need to give it another inch of throw. Okay, I can build one. I can fix that.
Mm-hmm.
So Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway, that's the guy who can do
it. I know
it.
Right where they're at, yeah.
You're going to have to talk him into okay. it. And oh, but here's what you do. Here's the key. Tom, just put me in line, okay? Just put me in line. When it's my turn, call me and wait till he calls you.
Yeah, I'm not in a hurry. Okay.
All righty.
Well, I sure appreciate that. I thank you for your help on that.
Yeah, you're more than welcome. Yeah, and he won't let you down. I know that. Thank you very much for that. Let's go to Gene. Gene, you're up next. How can I help you?
I have a 2019 GMC Denali with the Duramax diesel. And recently, when it gets up to temperature, my oil or my temperature coolant light will come on saying I'm low on coolant, and I will check it, and it is plumb full. And I can push the reset button, and it'll go away for, you know, 15, 20 minutes. It'll come back. Sometimes it goes away for a longer period of time, but it happens every day. And like I say, the reservoir is pull. Is it a bad sensor or something?
Well, what we typically do to fix that, and this works more times than it doesn't, is to take the bottle completely out of the car and take that sensor out and hit it with a wire brush or something to clean off the moss and the trash on the outside, because the sensor loses sight of what it's supposed to do. And that works 75 to 80% of the time. Now, then a couple of the shop owners go, yeah, Mark, but it comes back in 90 days or 2 months or 3 months, and we end up replacing the sensor. Okay, fine. Those are the two choices. Let's see if it is the sensor, and let's clean it up. And if that elongates the time, then we know it is the sensor. And if it comes on again, then replace the sensor. It's not that big of a deal. This isn't, you know, rocket science. So that's how I would handle it.
So you just take the bottle off up there where it's mounted up by the firewall.
It's the overflow tank, the one with the pressurized cap on it. And then the sensor is in that tank. And so you're going to take that whole tank out and put it on your workbench and take it out and clean it up and put it back together.
See if it works. Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Okay. Good luck to you. Thank you. Thank you. And let's go to Mike. Mike, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. I just wanted your opinion on why my 2001 Chevy Malibu idled high some days, and then other days just back to normal. I had a test run at the shop, and also my throttle cleaned. And it's you couldn't find anything. So
okay, yeah. I'm gonna have you staying right there. Hey, Gene from the Duramax. You talked about the Duramax, and you said you had two problems. I want you to know that the Duramax wants to run in the middle mark to the three-quarter mark on your gauge. The middle mark to the three-quarter mark. So if you have a over temp light, usually it's red, but a temp light would usually be yellow, which is caution. I didn't address that, but it's normal for your Duramax. It's normal for every car on the road today to run somewhere between 210 and 220. And everybody, there's a lot of old guys out there that want to put a 160 thermostat and run it under 200, and that's a bad idea. It's a bad idea. We know that now, and we know that from here on in. So my trucks, all my vehicles run between 220 and 240, and I'm perfectly happy with that. And there's a good reason for that. But anyway, Mike, to go back on your Malibu, let me explain. The idle is controlled on your Malibu by opening and closing a vacuum leak. So if we want the idle to go higher, the idle air control motor, which is this little electric motor that goes zzz in, and it's got a cone on the end of it. And the cone goes into a matching cone hole. So the cone goes in, and it shuts off the air, and the idle drops, and then the computer goes, wait, stop, give me some idle. And so then the cone comes out a little bit, and this happens three or four times a second, and the idle air control motor will move in and out until it finds the idle it wants that the computer wants. So you can have a vacuum leak at the PCV valve. You can have a vacuum leak at the brake booster. You can have a vacuum leak somewhere on the engine that's causing the erratic idle. But how many miles has your Malibu got on it?
it's about 130,000.
Okay, this isn't a big deal because us old guys have done this before. If you want, you can take a 4 foot piece of heater hose, like 5/8 heater hose, stick one end in your ear, and take the other end and start waving it all over the motor. And if you hear this, then you just found the vacuum leak.
I see that.
But you can also, if you want, disconnect the battery and then disconnect the idle air control motor, pull it out, clean it up, and put it back in. It's better to hire someone to do that because 50% of the time you end up messing up the motor.
Right.
And so hire someone to go in but don't tell them that. Just say, is that a possibility? Now, another thing, too, is we can usually plug in a scanner and watch what's going on, and we can create lies about what we want the idle air control motor to do to see if it can respond. And so carbon buildup on a 100,000-mile throttle body, it might be something where they just take the throttle body off and clean that son of a gun up and put it back on with a new base gasket, and boom, you're home free. But the worst-case scenario is take the throttle body off, clean it up, and put a new idle air control motor on it, and the success rate on that is 99%.
I see. Very good, sir.
Assuming there's no external vacuum leak somewhere else, pay attention to see if this problem is there when your foot's on the brake. Pay attention.
Okay, sir. Appreciate that.
Okay. All right. Well, good luck to you. Thank you, Mike. And the lines are wide open, and there's five of them, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You see, with the fuel-injected cars, how we raise and lower the idle is we add air to the engine. So this little cone is on a motor, and it sits in a cone hole. So it goes all the way to the bottom, and then the computer backs it up a little bit, and it looks at the RPM, and it says, wait, it's only at 400. I want 600. And so it tells the idle air control motor, come on back just one or two steps. Oh, yeah, 600. Hold it right there. All of that happens in 1/10 of a second. So the computer is monitoring the idle air control motor, it's monitoring the RPM, and it knows that the RPM is directly related to the idle air control motor. Until it sees the throttle position sensor says, hey, Mark's wife just got in the car, and she just hit the throttle, and it's now at 50%. Well, the idle air control motor is out of the equation at this point, and so now the computer is opening and closing valves to add fuel. So all of this is going on, but there's a lot of us that understand what goes on and how it goes on and why it goes on. So I forgot to tell Mike, there is what we call minimum idle authority, and that's where you synchronize the throttle position sensor, the idle, and the air control motor steps. So before, and I am sure that I am 90% sure someone has already messed with all of those. So the very first thing we have to do is go in there and synchronize and lock down the idle air control motor steps, what they call steps, the RPM, and the idle air control position. And so we have to get all that together, and that's called minimum idle authority. And so we have to set that first, and sometimes just that conglomeration of adjustments is all you need, because someone else thought, well, let me turn this screw, that didn't work, well, let me turn this, and let me do this, and let me do that. That's what creates the problem, is not understanding that we can't just go in there with a screwdriver and raise the idle on a fuel-injected motor. We can't do that. It doesn't work, and it sets check engine lights, and it causes all kinds of problems. And then when you turn the car off, the car engine doesn't stop running. It diesels like crazy, and it runs backwards and all kinds of stuff, because now we're feeding it fuel when really the computer wanted to shut the butterflies completely, shut the fuel off when you turn the key off. But because somebody tightened up this screw, we're now delivering fuel to an engine that should be shut off but wants to continue to run. And diesel is what they call it. Anyway, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Well, 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, if you'd like to join us, we have two lines taken. That means we have three open, and the phone number is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll talk about your car problem, give you advice the best I can. And this is an opportunity for there to be give and take. So you kind of give me the brief overview of the problem you have, and then I'm going to ask questions, and then the answers is going to be yes, no, or I don't know. and those are all acceptable. And then that way I can kind of narrow it down, because this is the kind of conversation that good shops have with their customers, so they can narrow it down and minimize the cost of finding the problem when the cost, when those that information is in the head of the person in front of you. 602-508-0960. Kurt's Auto is up at I-17 in Bell. He's a good guy. He's done a lot of good work. He recently won the Better Business Bureau Ethic Award. He opened up his doors in 1987, and he's been around and working on domestic and imports, both gas and diesel. So if you're in your I-17 in Bell, Kurt's Automotive is a great place for you to try. Let's go to the phones. Philip, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hey, thank you for taking my call. So I'm calling on behalf of my daughter. She drives a 2003 Kia Sorenta. It's got 176,000 miles on it. The AC does not work. We replaced the AC, oh gosh, it's got to be 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago. $1,800 bucks. It's got 176,000 miles. There's no real problems with the engine. It's just no AC. It's getting daggone hot out there.
Okay. Well, the question is what are we missing? It could be that the low-pressure switch has kicked off the clutch, and it won't allow you to get air conditioning because the low-pressure switch detects a low refrigerant charge. So we could have a low-pressure switch that stopped it. A guy like me, I'm going to take a battery lead, touch it to the compressor, bypass all that stuff, see the compressor fire up. I'm going to grab a hold of the suction hose on the back of the compressor. It gets cool but not cold. Boom, I'm done. I'm going to pull all the refrigerant out, weigh it, clean it, and it has 2 pounds, and I look at the sticker, and it takes 3, and so I'm going to add a pound to my 2. I'm going to give you yours back, two pounds back. I'm going to add a pound to it, and you're going to spend $100, and we're going to start all over again. Now, you want to track the leak. Depends on how long ago this work was done. So a lot of people say, no, it's been fine for 2 years. I just want to fill it up again. Okay, fine. I can do that. So in your particular case, the question is the compressor running? And if it's running, then you would touch the suction line on the back of the compressor, and it should be cooled or cold. Then the question is why aren't we getting cold air inside? And maybe the blend door's broken. And if the blend door is to swing left for cold air and swing right for hot air, and sometimes it'll break in the middle, or it'll swing and it'll take off the cold air, so you don't have cold air, but really we're making cold air, but the blend door's screwed up. So there's all these moving parts. But to be honest with you, the checkout on that thing's probably somewhere between $50 and $75, I'm guessing. And then there is a small possibility, a small one, that the $50 to $75 plus another $40 to fix it. So once you found it and it's a bad connection, or it's a low-pressure switch that's broken or something like that. So that's what I would do, is I would have someone diagnose it and say to them, what's your checkout charge for an AC that's not blown cold? And does that apply to the repair? Yes, it does. Okay, thank you. And then that's how the conversation, I suggest, should happen. Does that make sense?
So, yeah, it does. Martin's Automotive is my guy, so he would be able to do that.
You got to change that then real quick.
Okay.
I'm teasing you. If you're at Martin's Automotive, you know he's a second generation. Dennis, his dad, and I go back to the 68 and 70s. And he came from a gas station environment. And if you're talking about Martin's Auto and you're talking to Dave, then there's no question he'll know how to fix this, how to find it, bid it, and fix it. He'll be he's a good choice.
Great. I appreciate your counsel. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You bet. Thank you very much. That's Martin's Auto, 16th Street. He's a good guy, and I promise you he's a good guy. Let's go to Steve. Steve, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, excuse me. I've enjoyed listening to you talk about oil over the years. Thanks for your show. I got a lot of old Chevrolet 350s and a bunch of Target-type crate motor 350s, and I've started just putting full synthetic in them because that's generally what's on the shelf. And my brother said that that's bad, could be bad for my motor somehow. And then I've seen oil filters that say, you know, for full synthetic, you should use this filter or that filter. Is that the case?
No. There's only a couple of different filter manufacturers in the United States, and so I don't care what box they are. I'm going to tell you that if I were you, I would probably just grab one of the cheapest ones on the shelf. I would not use a synthetic oil, because there is no way in God's green earth that filter is going to know what kind of oil you put in the motor. It's not going to know. Synthetic oil is backward compatible for the same reason that we used to use leaded gasoline, and we don't anymore. It's we move forward. and oil is forward compatible and backward compatible. So a synthetic is the king of the hill right now, and you can put synthetic in a 1922 Mercury, if they even made one, or some 1917 Model A. You could put synthetic in there. It's backward compatible. And so there's no harm, no foul. On certain cars that are leakers, synthetic is too expensive per quart to put in on something that's either going to burn it or leak it. So in customers of mine, if they've got a burner or a leaker, I'm going to put them in a conventional straight 30 weight or something like that, and that's going to serve them the best. But I wouldn't put them in synthetic and bring them in every 10,000 or 15,000 miles for an oil change, because they're going to drink so much oil that they're never going to need an oil change. and then that makes the whole thing mute. So in your particular, I disagree with your brother that it's backward compatible. And I disagree with the filter idea. That is something that...
Well, he mentioned, like, during break-in, you shouldn't have closed, like, right after you put your new 350 crate motor in, you know, after the first change of the high nickel, you know, the break-in oil, I just put full synthetic in, and he goes, oh, you shouldn't do that.
Okay, well, first of all, this is an old wives' tale about using this kind of oil, which furnishes some kind of nickel or some kind of additional metal to a new motor. They don't do that when they make the motor, and we don't do that when we make the motor. That's just an old wives' tale. Now, for a new engine, I'm going to ask you this question. Okay, put your hands together in front of you like you're praying, and I want you to push your hands hard together and rub them as fast as you can. Okay, that's your motor. Okay, now we want to get in there with some oil, and we want the oil to get in that the spot that's the thickness of a human hair. We want to get in there, and we want to provide lubrication, and we want to carry trash and heat out. Do you want to use peanut butter, or do you want to use sewing machine oil?
Yep, I've heard you, and I've enjoyed it.
Yep, that's the way I feel. And synthetic oil is a premium oil. It extends your oil change intervals. It protects your engine better than any does. And here's the deal. The synthetic oil at 500 degrees turns to a tar. Your motor is trash at 300 degrees. And so it doesn't really make any difference. But a conventional oil at the tall 200s turns to a tar. And so I'm suggesting that if we have an oil in there that'll at least protect the engine into the heavy 300 mark, then we're better off than something that's going to fail at 230, 250 degrees. So I'm not going to argue with your brother, but just ask your brother how many quarts of oil he sold last year and how many cars he changed oil in. And his answer is probably going to be about 2 or 3 hours at my shop.
He spent a lot of money at the dealer instead of a better place, in my opinion.
And is he an older brother or a younger brother?
Older, a couple years.
See, that's with me, too. My two older brothers, one was a policeman, one was a banker, and they know more about cars than I do.
That's right.
So it's just something we got to live with. I got to go. The lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. I was teasing about my brothers because one of them is a policeman and the other is a banker, and I'm scared of them. So I just used them as an example. So I apologize to my brother Ralph and my brother John. Nevertheless, we'll be back right after this. Okay, may I have your attention, please? If you live in the Sun City area, I get calls that says, hey, send me to a good shop in Sun City. That's no problem. I'm going to send you to Auto Dynamics. They are family-owned and operated since 1982. Chuck, the owner, I've known him since 1968. They have high-quality service and people and repairs, and they stand behind their work. Their staff and their technicians are not paid a commission or a percentage of your repair bill. Therefore, they can't sell you unnecessary parts or repairs. So Automotive Dynamics, north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue, is a good place. All righty, we've got open lines available, but I'm going to go to Ed first. Chuck and Bob, you stay right there, and we have two lines open, 602-508-0960. Ed, you're first. How can I help you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I seek knowledge on fuel additives. Now, I like to run a you know, some sort of an additive to clean the fuel system up. Number one, am I wasting money? And number two, if I'm not, which would be the brand you prefer?
I don't believe in those at all. I don't think that
there's
a good science to them. I don't think that that they can show that that's going to fix a fuel injector that's slightly plugged or the spray is dripping instead of spraying. I don't see those. I have extensive experience, especially when we start seeing fuel injection cars in the 90s. I went through those injector flushes, and I owned the machine, and I sold the machine, and I did everything everybody else did. And in my opinion, that machine never did anything except make me money and take it from the customer's pocket. And we were sold on the idea. So now, let me tell you, I've got old cars and hot rods that I will put a fuel additive in that absorbs water that has a lot of alcohol. So when I park the Corvette and the Camaro, I'm going to put some additive that has alcohol in the tank, and it's going to absorb the moisture because alcohol absorbs moisture. That's all I do for the tank. That's all I do.
Okay. So it probably is no good in a chainsaw either, which is a two-stroke.
Oh, now that's a different story. I actually fill mine up with clean fluid, with clean gasoline mixed with oil, on the one that doesn't mix it automatically, and then I'll dump the gas out and put it in my lawnmower, and then I'll put new gas in my chainsaws. I bet I have five chainsaws, and you and I both know that the worst scenario is you pull on those until you have a birthday and none of them fires up.
Yeah, you may as well have gotten a handsaw. Yeah.
So I know what you're up against, but I don't want to leave my tank on my chainsaws empty because there's plastic lines inside there, and there's a filter in there, and I don't want those to dry out. So I just dump the gas and oil that's mixed together inside the tank. I dump it back in my 5-gallon container. That's hermetically sealed, by the way. And then I'll use that to fill it up again. But I'll store it with clean fluid. And that's all I do. I don't use any additives in any of... And I have, up at the ranch, I'm looking at quads, six of them. I got that many grandkids, by the way. I'm looking at bobcats and tractors and boom lifts and skid steers. And I do all of that on all of those.
Well, for storage, I've been completely emptying small engines, motorcycles, and so forth, completely emptying the carburetor, gas tank, and everything. And it's been working great for me.
No, you're
rather
right.
Rather than the ethanol gas going bad. I don't know. What do you think about Stabil?
No, I use Stabil. I'll use that if somebody's gonna park a car or if I'm gonna park a motorhome for 6 or 8 months. Yes, I use Stabil in the fuel tank. Yes, I do. But think about this. There's a difference. If we're mixing the gas and the oil premix and we're putting it in the engine, then the carburetor's only gonna control the fuel delivery and air. Where a four-stroke motor, the carburetor controls air and fuel, and we have all kinds of small orifices in there. There's a big difference between those two kind of things. So I'm emptying I'm putting fresh fuel in my chainsaws because I don't want the inside of the components inside the fuel tank to get brittle. On my four-stroke guys, I have a big syringe that's hooked to a piece of fuel line. And so at the beginning of the summer when I start mowing the grass on my John Deere riding lawnmower, then I just take the syringe, I suck out all the fuel, I put it in the tractor because the tractor has a 30-gallon tank and a half a quart of gasoline, rotten gasoline, isn't going to make any difference. And that's how I do it. So I'm not real worried about the four strokes. But if you were going to use Stabil, then that wouldn't be bad in your 5-gallon container for this four strokes that you're going to store. I agree.
Okay. Well, thanks very much. Okay. I've learned something here.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the honor of talking to you. Chuck and Bob, you guys got to stay here because I got a break in about a minute, but I'm going to break early and throw it back to Gil so that we can get back to you guys early. So we'll be right back.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 41 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and let me tell you real quick about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. I've known the Thompson family since the 70s when their Brian and Thelma's parents were in the gas station business as well. I know them, I trust them, and I can't tell you how many times people in the East Valley, Mesa, and east of there, and south of there, and north of there, I've sent them to Thompson's, and I've got a nice letter or a nice email, and they always say the same thing. They're such nice people. Well, not only are they nice people, but they know how to fix cars. So if you're in the Mesa area, unfortunately, the only shop I can recommend is Thompson's Auto Repair. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. Chuck, good morning. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark. I've got a 2005 Dodge Viper, and I've got two questions if you have time. First question is, I have a erratic idle when cold. Some background, I don't drive it too much anymore. 4 years ago, I replaced ignition modules, which are underneath the intake manifold, so I pulled the intake to replace that. I'm old, so I don't remember if the erratic idle was right after that or later down the road.
Okay. That's something that can be fixed. It just has to be experienced. And here's why. So I'm going to start it up in the morning, the first morning, and I'm going to see an erratic idle. And so the next morning I'm going to be prepared because I'm going to have a bottle of propane with a long hose on it. I'm already going to have that into one of the vacuum ports. So I need to find out if it's running rich or lean. Okay, too much fuel or not enough fuel. So I'm going to start it up. It's going to run ragged. I'm going to crack open my propane tank, and all of a sudden, it's as smooth as glass. I go, okay, I need more fuel. So then I'm going to check to make sure the coolant sensor is talking to the computer, and I'm going to make sure the idle air control motor is moving up and down and not all carboned up. So there is a process to figure out why is it running. Another thing you could do is you could take the snorkel, the air filter. Well, you can't because the mass airflow sensor is in there. Sometimes we'll create a vacuum leak on the motor to see if that makes a difference, because if it's running rich, it'll run poorly. Another thing you can do is pull the spark plugs out, and they'll tell you a lot. So if the spark plug's white, it's running lean, and if it's black, it's running rich, and that kind of sets us in the right direction. After it warms up, I bet you don't have the problem, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And how does it run off of idle? So if it's cold and you get in it and you start it up, you let it warm up for a minute or two, you put it in reverse and back out, as it drives for the first 10 or 15 miles, is there any significant issues at that point?
No. Runs normal.
Okay. So we got a rolling idle when it's cold. Is that would be it?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
There's just a lot of things, and that's one of those things where you're going to clean the throttle blades first, and then you're going to do this, and then you're going to start doing tailpipe emissions. So you're kind of going to go through a checklist between your ears to try to figure out. What part of town do you live in?
North Phoenix.
Okay. I'd go to Harker's, 38th Avenue and Indian School, 25th Street, and Indian School is Billy. He could handle that. Martin's could handle that, and then Blackwell on 40th Street and Greenway. All of those guys have the skills necessary to figure out, do we need more fuel or do we have too much air? That's the question.
Okay. Right. Second part, it's got 177,000 miles. Manufacturer recommends oil change, Mobil 1 040 every 3,000 miles. I've done that his entire life. I don't drive it much anymore. I don't put 3,000 miles a year. What do you recommend for oil changes?
I would probably. What oil are you putting in at a 4? A 540? A Mobil?
Correct. That's
okay.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that's long gone. I'd be using a 020 if I were you, and I still think you change it once a year because the car went through four seasons. Even though it's not running, it still had the moisture, it had the humidity, it had the heat, and it had the cold. And each one of those creates problems within the engine, predominantly just moisture. There's the abundance of moisture.
Okay.
Now, if you want, you can give me a call, and I'll come over and drive it every once in a while for you.
Well, the car is primarily used to take a six-year-old grandson to Dairy Queen and maybe a hot rod show.
There you go. I'm going to tell you a real quick story, okay? I had a yellow Viper, and I told my son he couldn't drive it and so forth and so on. And so one day I let him drive it. And he curbed it and blew the right front and the right rear off of it. And I was really mad at him, as you can imagine. Fast forward a year later or something like that, I'm coming from home and I'm coming the back way to the shop, and I go around this corner and I decide to throttle it up a little bit. I curb the other side of it and took the left front and the left rear off of it. Now, I didn't know how to fix it at home before the rest of the family saw me, so I had no choice but to tow it to the shop. Little did I know that my son saw me crash the car. Because he was coming down Priest, and obviously I haven't lived that down. So be careful. I'm only offering you Grandpa to Grandpa. Be careful what you show him what to do, okay?
Well, I've had a few incidents with it, but I've kept it quiet.
Okay, good for you.
Just between me and my insurance company.
Mark paid for both of them. All righty. Thank you very much. Thank you for the laugh. Bob, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. Hey, I took my car, which is a hybrid, 2017 Camry, in, and they came up with a recommendation that made me think, and I don't think I should do it, but they wanted to service the fan that cools the hybrid battery.
I know that if the fan quits, that there's going to be a warning device that's going to pop up on your dashboard or on your information center that tells you something's wrong. What year is the hybrid?
17. It's got 36,000 miles on it. Runs perfect.
And I think what might be happening here is that the fan doesn't have the life that they want it to have, or it's been redesigned, and they're trying to tell you the fan you have in there is a piece of manure, and that they make a better one, but they don't want to say that. This is what I would do if I were you. I would call the parts department and have the VIN in front of you. But just don't give them the last six of the VIN. And if you do, just make up those numbers. Okay?
Uh-huh.
So you're going to give them the VIN, and you're going to say, do you have a blower motor for the battery compartment on my hybrid? And they'll say yes. And you say, can you tell if that's an upgraded one or not? And they can look at the number and they go, yes, this is version 3.
My understanding was they're wanting to clean it. And it draws the air that goes back into that battery from inside the cabin.
I don't know why you'd clean it. How much trash is on your dashboard or on your shift handler?
Nothing. I don't drive with the windows down or anything very often.
Yeah.
Here's
the tiebreaker. The tiebreaker is your owner's manual. If your owner's manual shows...
It's not in there, and I asked the guy, I says, why is this stuff not in the manual? Or in the maintenance guide deal that I've got with the car? And he said something, well, it's something that we check, you know.
Okay.
But on top of that, there's a... I checked, and there's a garage that does this for $119, And it looked like a nice clean shop, and they wanted $320, $360 or $327, something like that.
Okay, but the question is what? Doing what? Are they vacuuming
it's
out the battery compartment?
Perfect.
Huh?
What?
What are they doing?
Well, I guess they're checking to see if there's dirt and dust in there.
Okay, so how hard can that be? Just access the battery. Take whatever.
Well,
I don't know. I don't know the answer to your question. I don't know that I'm suspicious of it, like obviously you are. I don't know what problem we're trying to fix. I've never seen a problem where one of my technicians came in and said, the hybrid has fuzz all over it. The battery has fuzz all over it. I never heard that. I've never heard that the compartment's dirty. And if it pulls air from the inside of the car, it can't be too doggone dirty. So I'm struggling with this thing. But this is what's going on right now in our industry. And we're making stuff up to make ourselves money. It's not in the owner's manual. And we're coming up with a good rap to sell you on the idea. So if I were you, I'd pass. Or better yet, do this. Say to him, you know what? Here's my email address. I want you to have your service manager send me a text and tell me what it is you guys do exactly and tell me why it's necessary. And that'll never happen. Got to run. Thank you very much. Leonard, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, good morning, Mark. Recently I listened to your story, and you said I have a little power steering. So you said to try putting some brake fluid in there. Not much to swell the seals. But if I did that, wouldn't I have to remove a little power steering fluid to put some brake fluid in there?
No, not necessarily. The window between the brake fluid low part and the brake fluid high part is typically on the dipstick at least a quarter of an inch or maybe even a half an inch. So if you put basically two or three tablespoons of brake fluid in there, you're not gonna substantially change it. I think two, three tablespoons of brake fluid is what I'm talking about.
That'll swell the seals.
Brake fluid does swell seals. That's the reason why we use brake fluid in the brake system and the rubber pistons and the rubber cups in the wheel cylinders and in the calipers are bathed in brake fluid. And the brake fluid causes a slight distortion. It doesn't soften them and make them soft. It causes them to slightly swell. So brake fluid and rubber, that's what happens. If you have a small power steering leak, you got nothing to lose by putting two tablespoons plus or minus of brake fluid inside your power steering reservoir.
One or two tablespoons. Okay.
Yes.
There's enough room in there. I wouldn't have to take anything out first. Just put it in there.
No, you're just going to put it in the power steering reservoir of where it has the fluid. That's all. Yeah.
I wouldn't have to take anything out, though, to make room for the new
not,
amount.
Not for three tablespoons. But there's a dipstick there.
Okay.
So yes, Leonard,
right.
When you take it off, just take the look at the dipstick, and it's going to be between the add and the full. And then when you're done, put the three in there, and I bet it's not moved a bunch.
Okay, very good. All right, Mike, thank you for the answer. I appreciate
You're
Stay
welcome.
Safe, by the way. Stay safe.
Thank you, Leonard. Thank you very much. Do we have anybody else right now?
Lines are open.
Okay. We are not going to... we're out at 59, 58. We got 6 minutes. If you'd like to call in, you'd be our last caller. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And the reason why I'm talking so fast like this is because Gil and I can have a record day on callers today. So we'd have 16 callers today, and we've never done that before. So if somebody wanted to call in and just shoot the breeze, we'll do it. 602-508-0960. But if you have a car question, that's okay too. But we have to be out sharp. Gil uses bad words, but my out time is 58 minutes after the hour and 50 seconds. Right now we're at 53:30. So we've got about 6 minutes. 5 minutes? 5 minutes? Yeah, 5 minutes to answer your question. So I'm just going to sit here, cross my arms, and just say, oh, we got a caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to Jim.
Jim is our record setter. Jim, hit me with your question.
What do I win?
You're going to win an eternal grateful. We Gil and Mark are grateful because you are our 16th caller, and we've never done 16. To be perfectly honest with you, everybody that listens to this show and other shows on radio, the typical talk show host gets two or three calls an hour. When we do 16 in 2 hours, we're like Babe Ruth at the mound, buddy. So you have to have a car.
I feel honored.
Okay, go.
And I'll make it a real simple question.
Okay.
I want your opinion on windshield wipers. I can go to Walmart and there'll be some there for 10, there'll be some there for 30. Michelin is the best. Da 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 da. What is your opinion on windshield wipers?
When I go to Walmart and look for windshield wipers, I buy the middle. I don't buy the cheaps and I don't buy the expensive. And they're in plastic hard containers, so you can't really feel the pliability of the rubber. See how firm, how soft it is. But if they're out where I can take them out and touch the rubber, I like firm but pliable. But to be perfectly honest with you, I do windshield wipers on my, it's been snowing and raining up north, so I noticed that my wipers aren't doing a really good job. So I called parts and I said, hey, put a set of wiper blades on my desk for me because I'm coming down on Monday. So my son calls me and says, you got wipers on your desk. How come? And I said, well, I told Jeff to put some on for my... He goes, well, you don't know how to put them on. And I said, you know what? You're about 2 seconds from being unemployed, son. So you go get the wipers, put them on your desk. As soon as you see me walk in the door, I'm going to throw my keys on your desk, and you're going to go out and put my wiper blades on because now you're just trying to wad my underwear up. And he laughed, and he goes, I'll have someone else put the wipers on for you, Dad. So I'll put them on. But
you have to remember, Mark, you're the top dog, okay?
You know,
you're the top dog.
Not anymore. No,
well,
I have a daughter, Andy.
Don't let them know it.
No, they already know it. We're going through right now. We have 20 bays. We have shut down one side of the shop in our busiest season, and they're putting 12 new underground hoists in. We're taking the hoist that we taken the center post hoist out that we put in 1994. So we have all this concrete saw cut out, and they pulled the old hoist, and you know what? not a leak, no environmental issues. I'm so proud of the way we installed those. So we're going to put in six on one side and then six on the other. Now, that's 12 of the 20 bays, and then the other bays down at the other end of the shop are for big motor homes and big tractors and big diesels and all that other kind of stuff, and come over on flat bays. But the kids are doing a great job in managing the installation of that. And the Alan said, what are we going to do about the saw cuts, the expansion cuts? And I said, well, what I did was is I cleaned them out with compressed air, and then I pump them full of black silicone, and then I took a putty knife and just scraped the top off. And he goes, okay. So then my daughter calls me and says,
2 minutes.
You know that Alan just bought a battery-powered caulk gun that's like $160? And I says, why? And she says, well, he says he's not going to pump 62 tubes of black silicone using a hand one. And I said, I tell you what you do is just put that $160 on his draws, on your brother's draws, and take it from his next check and tell him he now owns that fancy, dancy electric caulk gun. So I don't know if she'll do that or not, but it is funny. And thank you for calling. And you are you a customer of mine by chance?
No.
Okay. I would like you Gil, you take him off and get the last four digits of his phone number. Jim, you're going to send me an email, mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com. Don't go anywhere. Gil's going to talk to you, and he's going to get the last four digits of your serial number or your phone number so nobody can pretend they're you. And then I'm going to arrange to get you a free oil change at the shop close by where you're at just for being our 16th. So I'm going to arrange an oil change free, and I'm going to pay for it, and they're going to treat you nice, and they're not going to sell you the world. So thank you very much for that. The rest of you, you can always send me an email, mark@marksalem.com. My name is Mark Salem, like the cigarette, mark@marksalem.com. Please give me your phone number. And I almost always want to have a conversation because I have questions to ask you, cold or hot, left or right. When was the last time you had this done? After they did this, did the problem come up? And so those are the kinds of things. But I always call from a blocked number. And if you don't answer, and I understand why you don't, then I just say, hey, this is Mark Salem. I'll call back in about 10 minutes. And so I'll call back with the same blocked number, so for obvious reasons. So God bless you. Drive safely. Wear your seatbelt. And if somebody does something nice, then pay it back to somebody else, and I'll see you next Saturday. Thank you.